Good morning. Exciting times here, Mesa City Council and Mesa. We appreciate it. We'd like to now convene our City Council study session, our regular study session, that is. And the first item on the agenda, one, welcome to Ms. Councilmember Terry Benelli, and we're glad to have you with us. It's great to have a full crew ready to go. Our first item is to hear a presentation and discuss a major general plan amendment for a property located on the southwest corner of Hampton Avenue and Chrisman. And we have Mr. John Wesley with us. Cue this up.
Get this right here. There. Mayor and Council, good morning. This is the second of two major general plan amendments that have been filed for this year. I want to go over briefly with you again kind of the process. So that you're up to speed on that, and then discuss the particular application. Again, this is an early part of the process where we're seeking input from the council so that the applicant can use that as they make their final submittal. So we did have two applications come in this year. They do have follow-up submittals that they can make by May 6th based on comments they're getting from staff, Planning and Zoning Board, the council, and their public information meetings. Once they make that follow-up submittal in May, the application is pretty well locked in at that time. As we then go through the 60-day review process that's required by state statute during June and July. The P&Z board will hold their public hearings. They're required by state statute to hold at least two public hearings. So we'll hold one of those in August, the second one in September. And once they take action on the plan, which could be at their September meeting, it'll come back to council then for actual action, which the earliest that could happen will be in October. So this particular request that we're reviewing today is at the northwest corner of the US 60 and Chrisman Roads, 38-acre site. The property currently has a business park designation on it and has been that way in the general plan for a number of years. The request is to change the west 25 acres of that to medium-density residential and the eastern portion to community commercial. Because they're requesting to change more than 20 acres in the Superstition Freeway corridor, which we consider to be one of our economic activity areas, job growth areas, that's what makes it a major plan amendment. And so that's why we're looking at it today. We'll leave 13 acres then for that commercial development on the corner. They do have in their project narrative some discussion about some of the design concepts for the property. As they would develop the commercial piece on the east and the residential on the west, that they would work to integrate those two developments. So we have a connection between the two and a more urban-type, pedestrian-friendly development environment that goes with the project. They don't have a specific developer at this time for the property, but they hope to by the time this comes back to you for the final decision. This chart comes from their project narratives and shows the impacts on jobs and housing in the area. You see currently they're indicating a projection of about 637 jobs could be developed on the property as currently designated. With the change, that would go down to just below 500, and they'd have a range of someplace between 150 and 250 dwelling units on the property. That fits within the scale of the medium density 6 to 10 that they're talking about putting on the property. So that's a brief overview of their request. We did present this to the Planning and Zoning Board a little over a week ago. They have given their review and comments. They had some concern for the loss of the employment in this area, but did not have any real significant comments that they made.
Council Member Summers.
John, I echo those concerns. This particular piece of property along the US 60 is in a growth corridor. It is has excellent visibility. It has a full diamond. The site itself is visible from the freeway. So in addition, it's also near Mountain Vista Medical Center, which it continues to grow and will likely grow as we see more and more residents moving, not just to the Phoenix Mesa Gateway area, but also out in Apache Junction and throughout this entire community. And this to me feels very speculative. There's no solid plan here. If they could bring me a plan with truly integrated mixed use and demonstrate how that was going to be a benefit over the existing zoning, I could support that. But that's not what this is. This looks entirely speculative. So I'm reluctant to support amendments that continue to erode our land opportunities to develop jobs and to develop, and those jobs are opportunities for our residents to gain employment and grow. So I would be reluctant to approve this as submitted.
Okay. Council Member Cavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to echo Councilmember Summers' concerns. I think the current designation for job use is more appropriate than the proposed amendment. So, again, I would not be in favor of this change, certainly at this time. I'd be glad to listen to comments as it goes through the process. But at first blush, I have significant reservations over this. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other council members? Thoughts and questions? I share those concerns as we sit down and look at the map. And I think we've learned history in Mesa over these decades that when we have these economic times start to rev back up, it seems like we have in the past, in some instances, lost opportunities for future growth and development of commercial and retail and job creating, building in the community, and often sometimes sacrifice those for putting in residential construction and homes that tend to make us more of a bedroom community and not those not a community that has long-term growth and jobs. And so I share those concerns, and I hope the applicant understands. That would be my thoughts. Any other thoughts from council members? Yes, Councilmember Benelli.
So I guess I have a question about neighborhood commercial versus a business park. I'm assuming that the quality of jobs or the wages of those jobs would probably have a different impact on in the area, right? I mean, if it's a business park, it's probably going to be a little higher wage jobs than a neighborhood commercial strip center or, you know, acreage. I'm not sure the right terms, sure. Obviously. Was this information in part of the planning and zoning documents?
Councilmember Benelli. We haven't delved deeply into that analysis yet. It'll be part of what we do over the next several months as we're reviewing the case. But on the surface of it, yes, we'd tend to agree that the types of jobs we'd see in a community commercial area would tend to not be the same type of pay jobs that we'd see in a business park employment type area.
I mean, my kind of gut reaction to this, obviously, is that, you know, in a transportation corridor and in a transit corridor, those opportunities for jobs are really one of the huge benefits of being on this corridor. So I would be in favor of not changing the general plan to keep it focused more towards higher wage jobs.
Excellent. Good. An important message I hope we're communicating. Any other information, sir?
That's it at this time.
Council members, nothing else? Thank you very much. Our next item is to hear a presentation and discuss highlights of the following departments, library, transportation, and arts and culture. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Feel free to introduce yourselves as we get started.
Good morning, Mayor Finter. Council, thank you very much for having the library here this morning. Am I talking too quietly? I'm sorry. It's the library voice. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Good morning. I am Heather Wolf, the library director. This is Don Kusarak, our management assistant, too. And we're very excited to be here this morning to share with you some of the bright spots that we see at the library now and in the future. So for our next slide, I always have to start with statistics. But I just wanted to share a national viewpoint of libraries. Last week was National Library Week, and CNN.com posted a really good article on libraries. It was called "Libraries Are Dying, Think Again." And it went on to explain that despite all the budget constraints that many libraries have experienced over the years, the internet and popular opinion, libraries are actually being used more now over the past decade than ever before. In fact, in 2010, the most recent year for which there is national data compiled, American libraries circulated 2.46 billion items, and that's billion with a B, and it's the highest amount ever reported. So what's happening in Mesa? This slide shows our top four measures. These are the ones we report to council and the city manager's office every month because we feel they're the most significant for our success. But I wanted to share with you that we count a lot of other things, other services that we provide. We count them for the International City County Management Association and for the Public Library Association. When you total those service units, we've actually interacted with our residents, and this is just so far July through March, we've interacted with our residents more than 4.2 million times in person, on the phone, and online. So our staff do an amazing job every day serving our public. ThinkSpot opened in October 2013. Many of you were there. So we've been open 6 months. And as you can see from these numbers, it's been a very successful 6 months. Earlier this week, I was at a meeting of the Alexandria Network. That's the partnership that Mesa, Scottsdale, Goodyear, and I'm forgetting one of the libraries. There's four of us. Who am I forgetting? Anyways, there are four libraries, and we partner with ASU's Entrepreneurship and Innovation Group to provide collaborative workspace and programming for business entrepreneurs. This program's only been in existence 11 months. Scottsdale was the first site to open. It was a great meeting. We all talked about what successes we have, how to build on those successes, how to help each other, and where we're going in the future. And we shared our statistics. And I'm not competitive at all. But I would like to point out that Scottsdale has been open 11 months, and they just reached the 7,000 mark. So I was very pleased when we announced that at 6 months, we're at 5,600 visitors. So even though we're not as established as the Scottsdale's Eureka Loft, ThinkSpot has definitely been a success in our community. It is being used. Just last week, Sarah reported that we had an entrepreneur come in and use the 3D printer to create a prototype that he's now going to take out and try to get some funding for his product. So it's doing exactly what we envisioned it doing, and I'm very excited about that. ThinkSpot is also nationally known. Makerspaces, which is a new book, it's called Makerspaces Top Trailblazing Projects, was published by the Library Information and Technology Association. It's a prestigious association within the library community. It was published in February 2014. We were very excited to see that of the 9 projects that were selected, ThinkSpot was one of them. So we are being recognized on the national stage for the unique and different service that we are providing in our library. Now, Hotspot opened in January 2014. This is a new service. We provide hands-on instruction on digital devices. We've noticed in our community that we had a lot of people who would actually bring their digital devices, still new in the box, to us and say, how do I use this? Yes.
I'm in such trouble.
She is not alone.
It's not like she voted yet.
So people come to us, and we didn't always have time at the desk. The phones are ringing. There are people waiting in line. So we created this service. It is open 3 days a week for 2 hours at a time at the main library, and we're in the process of expanding it to the Red Mountain Library. Basically, we are teaching you how to use your device and all the great sources that we have at the library. Many people don't realize what resources we offer for free. And this slide is just a sampling. There's 4 that I listed there. Probably should have done A to Z because we actually do have a product that starts with A. But I picked these because of the variety.
Question for you, Heather.
Oh, sorry.
Are you getting a lot of senior citizens coming to ThinkSpot to learn about the technology? Because I know there's a lot of interest out there. And so are you seeing a trend?
Well, Mayor Finter and Councilmember Luna, Yes, we're seeing a lot of senior citizens in ThinkSpot. ThinkSpot is appealing to all ages. We're seeing homeschooling groups there. We're seeing children after school, both elementary and high school students. The studio is attracting a lot of the high school students. And then the makerspace portion, the 3D printer, is attracting a lot of senior citizens. They've heard about it. They want to see one in action. And we also have a number of senior citizens who are using it. Sarah calls them the hobbyists. We have some pilots out of Falcon Field. They're not commercial pilots. They're coming to make devices on the 3D printer to hold their iPads or their phones in the cockpit. They're finding plans online, and then they're making them that way. So we have senior citizens who are using it for personal reasons like that. So it's the whole gamut, and that's what we wanted. So in Hotspot, we do see a lot of senior citizens. In fact, we had a woman cry after attending a class because she felt so disconnected from the world because she did not know how to use the technology, and she wasn't able to communicate with her grandchildren. And after taking the class and learning what she could do, she was so thrilled that she could go to her church's website and see what was going on, and that she could communicate with her grandchildren by texting, by connecting with them by Facebook, that sort of thing.
Wonderful. Councilmember Luna.
What about the teleconference capability? Because I know you have those areas where you can do some teleconferencing, which is a great part of ThinkSpot. Have you had any actual users use that?
We mostly have been using it for programs at this point. An example, this afternoon, the Maricopa Library Council is holding a tech talk at, they're holding it at Burton Bar, and then ThinkSpot is linking through the technology that we have, and then we're doing a demonstration of the products that we offer at ThinkSpot. We are hoping to get the word out more and more about the video conferencing technology and what people can do with it. It is the only place right now where people can Skype in the library. So we have had people Skyping in the space.
Yes, Councilmember Benelli.
So is Hotspot located at ThinkSpot, or is it at all the libraries?
No. Thank you for asking that question, Councilmember Benelli. The Hotspot is a separate service from ThinkSpot, and ThinkSpot kind of taught us that we needed a service like Hotspot. For those of you who are city, it's sort of our IT to you, except for the public. So Hotspot is currently at our main library. It's a separate service point, and people can come there 3 days a week, 2 hours at a time. Plus, the technology specialists who staff that offer one-on-one appointments, and they are offering classes. In fact, in just the first three months of operation, they made 86 one-on-one appointments with people, and they taught over 750 people how to use the library resources. So it's a well-used, well-loved service, and it's only 3 months new.
Nice.
Any other questions about Hotspot? All right. We also have it was kind of in the Hotspot, ThinkSpot theme, so I kept it going with bright spots. So we have a new bright spot, and that's the Dobson update. For those of you who've been around a while, Dobson was built in 1987, and it's a well-loved and beautiful facility, but it is not very technology compatible. It's a block constructed building with a metal roof, and it makes it hard to wire the way we need to wire technology today. So in 2012, we conducted a community survey, and we asked our customers what they needed and wanted in Dobson. And we thought we knew, but they surprised us. And their first priority was access to a restroom inside the building. They also wanted rooms for individual study and small group meetings. And they were looking to reduce the noise from the children's area. So in 2013, a master plan was created, and construction started on phase one. Phase one is now complete, and as of March 2014, our patrons can now access a family restroom from inside the Dobson Library. And I know that Councilmember Kavanaugh has been out to see that. And we're very excited. Phase two is starting. but phase two is starting, and with that, we are going to be constructing with glass walls, so it won't be a true construction project. But we will be creating two study rooms and then a small group meeting room in the space. And we will also be working to enclose the children's room in a way that allows us to continue the early childhood literacy development activities that need to happen in that room, but reduce the resulting noise. So we're very excited about that. And then phase three will be next fiscal year. So we're moving along with that. The Stuffbrary is something that's been getting a lot of media attention lately. This is a brand new service. And with the Stuffbrary, basically we're highlighting that we do circulate, check out, unconventional items. It started with bike locks in January, and I know that Lenny is coming next, so I want to give a shout out to the Transportation Department. They helped us get 25 Master Lock bike locks, which are not inexpensive. So they're sturdy and they're quality made bike locks, and now people who bike to the library can come in, get a bike lock, and lock their bike while they're in using the library. So the Transportation Department really helped us do that and offer this service for free. Now we have croquet sets and play at the park kits, and you can see pictures in the presentation there, and then cake pans will be coming soon. So we'll be circulating cake pans from the library. We had an article in our April e-newsletter on the Stuffbrary, and you can see on the slide, these are just a small sampling of the many, many positive comments we received. People were really excited about this. So, all right. As you all know, the Mesa Express Library, or MEL as we call it, has been open since May of 2011. Here are all of the computer sessions, the questions, answers, number of visitors, and the number of items circulated from that one small location in that short amount of time. So as you can see, it is very popular with our Southeast Mesa residents, and I'm sure they'll be happy to hear that just on Tuesday, I received the signed copy of the amended lease, and we will be continuing in that space for another 3 years. So we're excited about that. MEL is also attracting attention from other cities like ThinkSpot. Many librarians from around the valley have come and visited. And just a couple of weeks ago, we hosted Glendale's Community Services Director and several of Glendale's council members at MEL. All right. My mother comes from an Irish background, and she has a saying, a lot done, more to do. And that's very fitting for the library. So this slide is the bright spots that either were in progress or things that we know for sure we want to replicate. I attended a presentation by Dan Heath. He and his brother wrote Switch, which is about change when change is difficult. And he talked about rather than solving problems, we need to concentrate more on cloning our bright spots. So this is an example of what the library is trying to do to clone our bright spots. So we have been in talks with Mark about a very exciting service, a coffee cart. We would like to have a coffee cart at all of our locations, but we'll start with the main library. And Mark is excited because it allows them to provide vocational training for their clients. And then our library patrons will have access to fresh coffee and pastries there in the library. And there is no cost to us because it's not a commercial venture.
Councilmember Luna.
Mark, are you talking about Mark Center?
Yes, the Mark Center. Absolutely. Okay. Yes. And we're excited about that. I couldn't do a whole slide on that because we don't have the agreements all signed just yet, but I did want to alert you that that is coming. We are frequently requested to expand our hours. People would like to see a return to the 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. closure and the Sunday hours. At our highest staffing point in fiscal year 2002-03, we had 181.3 FTEs, and they covered three locations and 198 hours. As you know, we've reduced staff and hours over the years. Currently, we have 78.7 FTEs at four locations, and we do cover 240 hours per week. So the total hours per week is more, but it's the number of hours that we're open. We used to be open 66 hours a week. Right now we're at 60. So we are continuing to listen to the community. We know that that is a concern of theirs, and we are investigating other ways. We've done a lot of automation. We've done a lot of things to create more efficient work processes, and we're going to continue to look at ways to find those hours because we know that that is a need in our community. So I wanted to let you know that. ThinkSpot. We were talking a lot about ThinkSpot earlier. Incredibly popular, and that's the most frequent request I get from people who've been to ThinkSpot is, when are we going to see it at Maine? So we've got to find a way to bring that to the Maine library in our community there. And then finally, I think Council Member Summers and I probably hear the most from people who are looking for more locations for the library. I know he's received some comments, and then I get a lot of people emailing or phoning asking for more locations. So that continues to be on our horizon. We're definitely looking at ways to replicate the success of MEL, the Express Library, and other models that work across the country. Nice. Do we have any questions?
Any questions, sir? Councilmember Luna.
Can you take your Kindle or your iPad to the library and download books?
Yes, you can do it at home.
Oh, okay. So tell me how that works.
Okay.
Oh, no. This is for the this is for the public to understand the process. I'm an educator, remember.
Step one.
Yes.
Actually, I am very lucky. My boss, Alex Deshek, who you know and who is on your floor,
yes,
is probably the best advocate for the library, and I know he will be happy to show you, but I will try to give you a verbal description.
Okay.
So what you can do is you go to our library webpage, mesalibrary.org, and there's a tab for downloadables, and when you click on that, you'll see all the many choices that we have. And there are many of them, and you can download ebooks, audiobooks, music, you can download movies. Hoopla is our newest product, and that has movies. In fact, my daughter saw a movie in her language arts class on Tuesday. They didn't have time to finish it. She was really curious about the ending. And so I came home, and she says, Mom, I can rent it on Amazon for $2.99. And I said, let's check Hoopla first. And there it was, and she got to watch it for free. So it was wonderful. Okay, so once you go to that downloadables menu, you pick which one you want, and then you click on it, and you follow the instructions. You do have to have a library card, but that's it.
Neat. Others? You know what? I love that Iris saying, a lot done, more to do. You know, I think back to when we first got here, Mayor Smith saying, get her done.
Yeah.
So I know it's not proper grammar, but we're working through, and I think it really brings home the point. The innovation, you know, as we went through that great recession and all the pains in the different departments, realizing that the library took a big hit in what they went through. And so over the years, I've learned to have great respect for you and all of your staff and what's being accomplished, and to see now you're roaring out with innovation and new ideas, and you think about all the other city departments that are doing that. That's a wonderful celebration to see under the most difficult of circumstances and tight budgets, we're able to still show a lot of innovation. So thank you. Also, all of your volunteers are amazing. Yeah, huge volunteer force that help get things done. So
we
appreciate
Mayor.
All that you're doing.
Thank you.
If there's nothing else from the council, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome. Feel free to introduce yourselves.
Good morning, Mayor and Council Member. I'm Lenny Hume, Interim Transportation Director. And since we have some new faces, I'll introduce part of our management team. Nice. To your right is Craig Bloom, acting deputy transportation director. He's actually field operations, kind of doing what I used to do. Next to him is Haley Stell. She's our management assistant. Yeah. You can go ahead and wave. And then over here on your far left is Alan Sanderson, deputy transportation director and our traffic engineer. I have Amanda with me. Amanda McKeever is our management assistant one, and she's going to help me with the presentation today. And actually part of our development, professional development, she gets some experience in presenting to the council. So wonderful. I'll hand it off to Amanda.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Good morning. Thank you for having us this morning. As you can see on the screen, we have a number of work groups. In fact, we have 18 distinct work groups, also including administrative staff. We are responsible for a wide range of duties and diverse activities. As a result, we have many different asset types that we maintain and operate. Within transportation, we have a dynamic staff that is cross-trained that gives us the flexibility to move our resources from one group to the other to maintain those assets at any one time.
To go along with Madison, we have three main funding sources along with bond. We've got highway user revenue. We have local street sales tax, an environmental compliance fee, and then obviously we have some of the bond money from our transportation bond. We'll talk a little bit about Alley Gates. We've heard council, and we got the direction from council to accelerate our Alley Gate program. Currently, we had $100,000 that we had as a budget adjustment this fiscal year. We're working on those Alley Gates. We've installed 35. We anticipate up to 42, maybe more. We've got some new contracts that are coming in that council will be seeing shortly. The prices are coming in a little bit more reasonable than what we had. We've added $300,000 from our operation side to go ahead and raise that to $400,000 for next fiscal year. And we estimate that to be around 250 Alley Gates. Again, it may be more because we have some new contract prices coming in.
Question for you, Vice Mayor Glover.
Not really a question. I want to thank Mr. Brady and Lenny for upping the budget amount for this item, because I know that whenever I go to any neighborhood meetings, this is one of the first things that if they have alleys in their neighborhood, they always bring up. They'd love to get them gated. I know neighborhood services can empathize whenever they hear from neighborhoods, so thank you for making this a priority.
Thank you, Mayor, Vice Mayor. Appreciate it. We do get a lot of good, you know, we get a lot of good kudos when we get those up, so we'll get it going as fast as we can. Graffiti abatement is one of our programs that we take a lot of pride in doing. In fact, it was highlighted in the Mesa Republic in August of 2003, where they used City of Mesa as an example for our graffiti program. With that, next slide, it kind of shows some of the numbers that we do in graffiti abatement. Fiscal year 12-13, we had over 16,000 applications that came in through our My Mesa app. This is that smartphone application that notifies us of graffiti, which goes to our contractor and they do the graffiti abatement. We nearly did almost 1.2 million square feet of graffiti abatement. Year to date, we've done about 837,000 square feet of graffiti abatement this fiscal year. However, we've experienced now over 19,000 apps, actually 3,000 more apps, which equates to a bunch of little smaller graffiti areas versus the big, large areas, which is good because that means we're getting the big stuff, and you know the best way to deter graffiti is to get it so nobody can see it the next day. So with that, we're on our last year of our contract with this company. It's done a great job for us. We'll be looking to do a new contract next fiscal year. We're expecting an increase in price because there's a bunch of little small areas versus the big area where the prices are a little more effective, where they can cover more area based on the unit price they get. So we're working on that contract and we're preparing that to for this next fiscal year. Along with service contracts, just like parks and other departments, we're experiencing increase in our service contracts. That's our landscape contracts, all the other things that we do. We contract more than 50% of our activities out through service contracts. Again, I mentioned landscaping, weed control, you name it, block wall repair, whatever happens to be, we contract that out. And we're anticipating some increases in the cost in those contracts. We tried to fit that into our budget the best we can.
Lenny, just an observation there. Recently, well, it's not that, a short while ago, we had some folks from out of town that were looking at Mesa for future opportunities, and one of the comments that came up pretty frequently is how clean this community looks. They were coming from the East Coast, and with regard to graffiti. They could not believe how clean the streets were, the walls, everything. It really stood out to them. So it's interesting what's happening in different parts of the United States, and when they come and see what's happening, the positive actions here. And I did want to recognize Councilmember Richens. I remember a long time ago when he looked at this contract, look at the opportunity to get a private vendor to do this, and that being able to match paint and other areas, just a great move. Loved by this community that we're doing this effort. So this is money well spent. Yes.
But I saw this in the presentation, and I mean, are we seeing a decreasing trend in the incidence of graffiti because we're staying on top of it better? Are people becoming discouraged to do it? Or do you think that number will end up be about the same by the end of the fiscal year?
We anticipate it to be about the same square footage-wise, but it's smaller stuff. You don't see the big stuff that really stands out that takes a lot of time to put out there, and it's gone the next day when we cover it up. So what you're seeing is more on streetlight poles and other things where you see markers and that kind of stuff. So we see smaller areas, but we anticipate about the same amount of square footage. We will continue to monitor that pretty close.
Thank you.
And also just to recognize Neighborhood Services, what they've been doing is going through different parts of the city, utilizing volunteer labor, reclaimed paint, and painting all those walls for long distances, uniform colors, and then they're able to better match so it doesn't look like this hodgepodge of colors through different neighborhoods. And really is making a difference. So a lot of people are working hard on this graffiti program.
Well, I can appreciate that. We don't leave the city very often, but when we do, we look at other cities and go, wow, we don't have it. I mean, we do stay on top of it. So I appreciate the report. CityWorks is we're doing a CityWorks upgrade. What that is that's our asset management software. As Amanda said, we have over 18 distinct work groups. That means they have a lot of assets out there, street lights, traffic signals, whatever it happens to be. We need to be able to track our work that we do on that asset. We use CityWorks as our software provider that allows us to track the cost of the maintenance on that, and also helps us predict what kind of frequency of maintenance we need. It gives us a better forecasting tool. We're doing an upgrade, which allows us to go hot out in the field, so we'll be having our laptops or eventually tablets that will be so you can communicate directly with the technician in the field. So when you had that pothole off of Vice Mayor Glover, when you had that pothole on Stapley, you know, right now we do an app and send it in, and it gets put into the database, and it goes to the technician the next day, or we call it out that same day if it's an emergency. This one here, we can just communicate directly with the technician in the field. So if they're in that neighborhood, we can address that issue more quickly, and it helps us track our data better. What it means for the public is that we're, along with this upgrade, we're also looking at upgrading our My Mesa app and actually going to a system that allows more communication back to the customer where their work request sits. So that when they send in something, they can get information back of what the status is on it. We can also communicate more with the customer. We really can't do that now. So it allows us to be a little bit more communication amongst the customer so they can know what's going on. Because we do get applications that come in through our system that we prioritize, and sometimes those are put on the back burner. It's not a safety risk, but we need to eventually, as we have a construction project come through, we'll address that. So we need to be able to get that information back to our customers. So our upgrade with the CityWorks will allow us to take the next step and be more involved with the community.
Today we wanted to tell
Vice Mayor.
Sorry, one quick question. Do we have an ETA on what the update for the My Mesa app?
What we're doing, we're going live Monday morning with our CityWorks upgrade, so we'll see. If we're quiet on Monday, you know we're having fun. we have several vendors we've looked at already, and it's really a minor adjustment to it. So we're actually got our specification together, what we're looking for. I would expect it probably in the fall, if not sooner. We obviously, with the big update to the server, we hope we get the bugs out of it. We've been very happy with the test results we've done so far, and it's worked extremely well. But there are several vendors out there that provide that, or actually partners with CityWorks. So it's the actual connection is quite easy to do. And we'll keep you, Council, abreast of when that comes forward, too.
Today we wanted to tell you about a couple of projects that we completed in the last year. The first one is drainage improvements that we did at Elliott Road and 104th Street. As you can see, the catch basin there had a great deal of debris that actually plugged up the trash racks and the drains. It was hard to maintain to begin with, but once water started to flow, it became critical that it was functioning, and if our staff wasn't able to maintain it, it was not fully operational. So as a result, we did some drainage improvements by creating a plunge pool at this location. All of the work for this project was completed in-house by city staff. The design was done by engineering, and the actual labor and work was done by transportation staff. As I mentioned earlier, we have a diverse and dynamic staff within the department, which includes concrete finishers, equipment operators, and workers. That type of staff enabled us to pull in the right people for this project and get it done. The next project we wanted to tell you about was another drainage improvement. This one was at Elliott and Signal Butte. This is a relatively newly designed area. As a matter of fact, the building in the upper left corner is actually the Apple facility. What happened here is the drainage capacity exceeded the original designs and needed to be improved. So we went in and made those improvements by creating a scupper and spillway. And this was another project that was completed all in-house. Design work done by engineering, and then the actual field labor done by transportation staff. In the next year, we have a couple of pieces of equipment that we're pretty excited about. The first one is a new striping truck. 15 years ago, Lenny spec'd out the striping truck that we're using now, and it has aged beyond its useful life. So we're really excited to get it replaced. The new model is going
the
to
truck
be...
truck or me?
No comment. The new model is supposed to be operational next spring, and it has a shorter turning radius that's going to allow us to maneuver in tighter urban areas. And it also has improved onboard cameras that will assist in the paint gun sighting. We expect this new piece of equipment to be more efficient and effective.
Mayor, does this mean I get more bike lanes?
Yeah.
Say that a little louder.
We could, repaint the old bike lanes.
You mean I get some new bike lanes?
Yeah, possibly.
New paint on the bike lanes?
Yes, freshen them up.
That would be our goal, Councilman.
That would be our goal, Councilman. The next piece of equipment that we're excited about are a couple of new sweepers. These sweepers are going to be replacing two existing sweepers that have also aged beyond their useful life. But the exciting thing about these sweepers is that they are being funded through congestion, mitigation, and air quality, which we like to call CMAQ grants. Each sweeper is approximately $240,000, and we, the city, only have to match 5.7% of that cost.
Another work area that I'd like to talk about quickly is our traffic signals, or ITS, or intelligent transportation. Systems. Sorry, Alan. Many of you have seen our transportation management center there at 6th Street, and part of that is monitoring our traffic and activities that go on out there in the field. You've seen our pedestrian hybrid signals. We got one on Mesa Drive, and we also have some down at Sossaman area there, and we'll continue to be putting those in as the warrants require. Countdown timer indications are all throughout the city. We have a few more intersections left. We'll continue to finish those projects, and then we have the accessible pedestrian signals, which are the devices if you're visually impaired. The signal push button, the indication, will actually talk to you. We have those at I know that for sure, one at Brown and Center, that actually tells you when you can cross the street, and we'll put those in as a warrant as we get a request for that. Kind of looking forward in the transportation department, we have a transportation plan update. We'll be doing that in-house. Back in 2002, we finished up the transportation. I believe it was the 2025 transportation plan. We'll be doing an update to that. We'll be bringing that to council to review and give us direction on that. We have the automated field detection sensors coming up. Council had seen that. That's actually devices that allow us to track the flow of traffic out in the field and give us real-time information. It kind of helps us provide a map similar to what ADOT does on the color of map and how traffic is flowing. But you also got to realize that we have over 432 signals. in the city of Mason, it's very difficult in our transportation management center to see all the intersections and monitor them all at the same time. This system allows us to communicate to us that there's actually a delay out there. We can actually then focus our energy on trying to get traffic continuing to move more smoothly. Westside real-time adaptive system, we have something similar out at Fiesta District, or out at Superstition Springs. This is actually an enhanced system that will be down in the Fiesta District that allows the signal timing to adjust based on traffic flows. And again, it doesn't take a human out there to adjust it. It's actually done by the system. Talk quickly about shared multi-use paths. We have several of those projects coming up. We're working through the parks bond along with transportation's bond. We have several sections down in the Rio Salado area, segment 3 and 4, which goes kind of ties into Tempe through the Riverview Park area and back up through 10th Street and ties into the West Mesa Connector Trail. Those will be coming up this next fiscal year and finishing up in, I believe, 2016. I'd be somewhat remiss if I don't talk a little about overlay program. That's one of my...
Question for you, Councilmember Benelli.
Okay. I know that there is a part in the general plan that talks about transportation. Is this transportation plan that you're talking about for 14-15 just like a deeper dive into transportation?
Mayor. Councilmember Benelli, that's correct. The transportation plan, the general plan is more general overview, and that's out for comments right now. The transportation plan gets a little bit more into the details of what we are planning in the future and kind of gives us more of a guideline. As I mentioned, I'd be a little remiss to not talk about our overlay program. This fiscal year, we anticipate around 52 lane miles of overlay projects we're doing. And Mayor Fincher probably experiences a lot of those right now in his district, in his area, his old district, your new district. we also have, we anticipate 121 lane miles. Not that we have more money to work with. What happens, our overlay program got a little bit of a late start because we started our job order contracts. And we're carrying the money over till next fiscal year to finish those projects up. And also the overlay program happens in the summertime, and the fiscal year is in July 1st. So, you know, we do a lot of work in August. So we'll be continuing that program. Just quickly to highlight some of the street bond update. As I mentioned a little earlier about the multi-use paths, we also have the 10th Street multimodal project we're working on, which we've did some initial public outreach, and we're continuing on that. And we'll work with Councilmember Richens on that project as we move forward. We have the arterial reconstructs. We're kind of excited about that. We have about $27 million in their bond program to reconstruct roads that are beyond their design life. Any surface treatment we do to it now is just a Band-Aid. We need to take the old asphalt out and put new asphalt in. Along with that, we'll be doing some concrete improvements and drainage adjustments and some street light improvements. We're kind of excited about this. We're going to try a little different delivery method where we're trying to accelerate. We understand the concern with traffic delays and things out there. We try the best to get construction in and out of there. We're going to work on a different delivery method. We actually take bits and pieces of that project. The street lights will come in and do that, their work. A little bit of water line or repair we have to do will come in and do their work, along with the concrete repair, and just do individual typical lane closures during non-peak hours. And then when we're ready to do the paving, we come in and we're looking at a cold-in-place recycle project where we come in and remove the existing asphalt, recycle it, put it right back down. Traffic should have it that evening, and then come back with a new surface course. So we're working on that process right now. Right-of-way improvements. We started one of those in Mayor Fincher's area, which is the landscape improvements of Lindsay and Southern. And we also are working on the First Avenue improvements, and we got some preliminary ideas on that. And we have some other projects that we'll be putting together. In fact, we're on these landscape improvements, we got a lot of them out there, so it obviously exceeds our dollar amount, so we're trying to prioritize them. Streetlight rusted pole replacement, we actually had a schedule with the funding we had provided, so we're just continuing until that project, until next year's funding or as we continue on, along with our streetlight improvements. That's spot improvements, and we had a list about 5 pages long of citizens' requests over the several years. So we worked through and we prioritized, and we're actually now putting those in design, or we actually got several of them designed, so we'll start releasing those projects here pretty soon.
Nice. Councilmember Richens.
And I wanted to compliment you for that. I mean, you know, where It's mostly on the west side where you have not the same standard during development. So, you know, I know on my street I have one street light, you know, so the compensation thing is everybody has a light pole in their yards and it does a better job. But I appreciated the approach, you know, because sometimes it looks like overwhelming. You have five pages, but you got to start somewhere. And so just starting to chip away, eventually we're done. You know, same with the replacing the rusted light poles. You know, eventually we'll get them all on right. the surface and appropriately installed. And so I really appreciate that approach. Thank you.
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, along with that, we're actually looking, we're doing an analysis to take a look at the older areas that have street lights, or intersections that don't have street lights. That have street lights in the neighborhood, but not at the intersection. I think that's critical. We're going to do a quick analysis and see what that gives us. And we actually got some new street light systems in that are actually more the LED energy efficient lighting. And we're looking at some of that solar lighting too. So there's some projects we're going to be playing with this next fiscal year. So that kind of wraps up the transportation department. If I have any questions.
Questions? Concerns? Wonderful. Thank you. We appreciate all the work that's being accomplished there. And seeing the improvements throughout the city, often hear from folks and that you know that have traveled back east in other areas. We do such an amazing job on the streets, and great things are happening. So thank you so much for what you do, and for all your staff. And
thank you.
Okay, our next group is Arts and Cultural.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Finter and council members, and a special welcome to our newest council member, Ms. Benelli, who is has been, as you'll hear in this presentation, a wonderful partner. Her organization, NEDCO, has been a wonderful partner to the Arts and Culture Department, and we are very proud of some of the achievements this year. I thought I would start, well, first let me acknowledge my colleagues in the audience behind me. I want to welcome and acknowledge the contributions, very important contributions, of the Assistant Director of the Department, Rob Schultz, the Director of the Arizona Museum of Natural History, Tom Wilson, and the Director of the IDEA Museum, Sonny O'Rourke. And it's fun to say the IDEA Museum and celebrate that wonderful new addition to our venues. I thought it would be useful to start by talking about how arts and culture help achieve Mesa's goals. And so I won't read the department's vision and mission, which you'll see on these screens, but I'll talk about the things we're doing that really relate so closely to the strategic initiatives of the council, particularly in the area of building Mesa's reputation for innovation and creativity. We've really worked hard to be a force in continuing to shift Mesa's reputation from what was once a sleepy town to an activated, on-the-move place with high-caliber offerings. And we think that there's been a tremendous amount of success in moving that forward. One of the things that happened this year that we were particularly proud of was we were selected to be the site for the first time for the Governor's Arts Awards celebration, and really were able to put our best foot forward for the entire state and created quite a buzz about the quality of both the venue and the event that our staff member who's out of town and couldn't be with us, Randy Vogel, produced and did a magnificent job. I also wanted to say that on the screen is a picture of this year's Dia de los Muertos Festival. And this year we had record attendance at Dia de los Muertos with 17,000 in attendance. And this is an image of the gathering after the processional at the very end of the festival. So even at the bitter end, you can see we had an enormous crowd. We are really working to create connections in the community and to build collaborations that allow us to deliver our services and programs more effectively and more efficiently. We feel that we're helping to build a sense of community and pride in our city, And the collaborations we've had have been really, really helpful in doing that. We've been collaborating closely with so many organizations. I can't mention them all, but Downtown Mesa Association, NEDCO has been active with us. We've worked with Parks and Recreation. We've had the wonderful collaborations around the amphitheater and the show that we did with the Boston Pops at the stadium last year. Mesa Recycles has been a great partner for several years and helped the Idea Museum and continues to help them with the new recyclery area in the new museum. And then we've developed, the colleges. We've been working very closely with the colleges, both the new colleges in town and both the ASU Polytechnic Campus and Tempe. We're really happy at how successful Benedictine's been with developing its visual arts programs, which take place in our studios at the Mesa Arts Center. And we are really working hard and will be working harder this coming year consistently to grow the sponsorships with the business community that allow for us to meet mutual goals. And the image on the screen is something that happened at our newest sponsor at the Mesa Arts Center. Eastmark was a sponsor of the Spark Festival this year, and as part of that, we went out to Eastmark and did a special preview event for the festival right on their grounds, and they invited the entire community out, and it was a lot of fun. I also wanted to say that before I talk about responding to needs and opportunities, I wanted to mention that we are doing all of this with a lot of daily innovation in the department. As you know, like with most of the city departments, we're dealing with a principally flat budget in terms of human and financial resources, and yet we have been working so hard to expand programming. And we, despite having had an enormous record participation last year, which is going to be hard to match for a while, I have to say that we're on track to approach or even potentially equal that number. We will certainly achieve as a department at least 600,000 in participation for this year, and hopefully quite a bit more than that with the way things are going. We are working hard to respond to needs and opportunities to grow and develop the impact we have, especially on our children, but for our entire community. And one of the things that really has been very important in that regard is the new program and the new brand at our wonderful new Idea Museum, which we are so happy to celebrate. I am pleased to share that we have reached the more than 2,000 member households number at the Idea Museum, which is a record that keeps growing. And the attendance is responding the way we hoped with the new branding. There has been a 35% increase in attendance for year to date over the same period last year. So we're very excited to share that. We are also working in so many different ways to enhance the opportunities and programs for the public. I can only touch on a few of them here, but these images help deliver the message. We have the wonderful growth in our creative aging program, where we have added some new sites and some new activities. You see a movement class there at a senior facility. We also have our great Jazz from A to Z program, which has just received word that for the third year in a row, we are receiving very competitive funding from the National Endowment for the Arts to continue to grow that program. And you see a group of students backstage on the lower left who are excited and getting ready for their performance at our Essentially Ellington Festival, where we had national experts come in and work with our students competing in a national jazz competition from high schools across the area, including Mesa high schools.
Wonderful. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I'd like to go back to just the creative aging program that you mentioned. I think this is something that maybe we as a council haven't heard very much about. And could you just give us a short summary of of what this program is and how it's affecting the community.
Absolutely, and it is something that we're continuing to develop. It started out a couple of years ago, first with a pilot, with a couple of programs, workshops in both the both senior facilities and senior residential locations. So we worked with the Fellowship Square location in East Mesa, and we also worked with East Valley Adult Resources and with what is now Oakwood Creative Care, which is a program for dementia and Alzheimer's patients. That year we brought in creative movement and also visual art activities with teachers who have particular expertise in working with older adult populations. And it was so well received that we grew it each of the next 2 years, this being the third year of the program, to now include drama activities that we are doing in those facilities. We added we also added a program on site called Mature Moving Me, which is a free program for older adults to come and take movement classes. So it's geared to things that will be low impact but give them exercise and a sense of creativity. And one thing that we've been so proud of is that each year, Elizabeth Johnson, who you can see in the maroon shirt raising her arm, leads the movement program for creative aging. She is the former associate artistic director of Liz Lerman Dance Exchange, an internationally known dance company working, which has a specialty of working in aging populations. And she has created an intergenerational community dance piece that combined older adults with younger adults and dancers that has been performed each of the last 3 years at the Spark Festival, and they performed it twice this year, and it was truly wonderful.
Thank you.
We've also been creating some, we're creating some new series and some festivals, expansion, new aspects that I'll talk about in a minute. We've had wonderful successes with some new special events and growing special events. Particularly, I wanted to point out that just last week, you see an adorable picture in the lower right, just last week, the Arizona Museum of Natural History enjoyed 600 people who came for the dino egg hunt at the museum. That was wonderful. And last year, you helped us by investing in the Mesa Grande program by adding an education curator, an associate curator for Mesa Grande. And we have been working and growing those programs, and that is going very well. And we think we're building a great foundation for a significant new area of education programming. As you know, that's a very big part of what the Museum of Natural History is involved in, and we appreciate the support of bringing those programs to the public. The museum has also had a wonderful opportunity of getting several major gifts of art and artifacts of the early Americas. On the upper right corner, you see the hunchback shaman in tunic from Colima, Mexico. It was created between 200 BC and 200 AD, and we have received several gifts that total in excess of $1 million of specialty, really excellent, excellent art and artifacts from the early Americas that will be featured in the future in a new expanded exhibition at the museum. We are also really working hard to strengthen the urban center. You know, we've talked about that in the past. It's a very important part of what the Arts and Culture Department feels they need to help make happen in Mesa. And we want to be ready for light rail. We want those first people getting off the light rail to just be bowled over by the things they didn't know were here. And so we're working very hard to build that reputation, to create the anticipation and the visitorship when the light rail helps make it easier for people to check us out for the first time if they haven't been here or come more frequently. In the this page celebrates specifically the addition of our Spark After Dark event, but it's really a symbol of the hope that we have to create that kind of activation on a more regular basis, and you'll hear some of our initiatives to do so. But it was a tremendously successful first-year event for Friday and Saturday night of the Spark Festival, and a lot of fun. We are working in many other ways to create that excitement that I'm talking about. We are developing new series packages for our Performing Live series, and 1 week from today, we'll be announcing those series. We'll have two new series that we'll be announcing in our packages to try to build those affinities with special audiences who care about certain art forms. We're doing our announcements a little differently this year. The packages will be announced next week. 1 month later, June 1st, we will announce all the major single ticket events for sale. So people will have, first of all, two different opportunities to get the first chance to buy by becoming members. And also, we hope to build the anticipation about the season by doing it that way. But you will see in both announcements that we are adding extraordinary artists and some really big shows to the program next year, which we're excited about. We have been piloting a series of events at the Alliance Pavilion stage at Mesa Arts Center, and actually both the museums have been adding some special events and testing new special events as well. The Alliance Pavilion, which was completed this past year, creates a wonderful opportunity in conjunction with our Art Place project to grow the sense of activation, not only at the Mesa Arts Center, but in downtown as a whole. And so we are adding performances there. You'll see more. We're doing that a lot of that this spring. You'll see a lot more of that next year. We are working very hard on the development of the Art Place project. We are currently in the design process for the interactive kiosk, and we are so excited. We are doing a competitive process for the conceptual designs for the new shade sculpture on the North Plaza. We had amazing artists apply, and we have three internationally known sculptors as finalists who will be presenting conceptual illustrations to us in a couple of weeks. So we are really, really feeling that will create wonderful opportunities. Obviously, that will be in the future because we'll have to raise the funds for that. But we hope that the image of what could be on that plaza with future expansion will help us raise those funds. We want to acknowledge that there's been wonderful collaboration with, as I said, DMA and NEDCO on all kinds of downtown activation. But in particular, I want to point out Mesa Up at Night. The theme for the downtown activation is, if you knew it, you'd do it. We want people to recognize that there's more that they should know about what's happening. And I love the way the NEDCO folks have helped design this little dog telling people that if you knew it, you'd do it. Some of them are behind me, and thank you for their efforts. We also have a great plan that we're working on for an exciting new facade feature for the Natural History Museum, which will be visible from the light rail, and we will hope that in the not-too-near future we'll be able to unveil those plans to you. But it will be another way to create that excitement. And then the lower left reminds people of the North Plaza, where we will be putting in the Art Place features in the future. A big initiative for our department is to work at growing the millennials and late generation X audiences. What does that mean? That means the 40 and younger crowd. All the way through the 20s and 30s, we feel that we have been growing awareness and participation in those audiences, but we want to continue to do so more rapidly, and so we are doing several things to try to make that happen. Some of it is this late night activation at the Alliance Pavilion. The lower image shows the crowd that gathered around the stage after the John Legend concert that was held a couple of weeks ago to a sold-out audience, and the artist was playing his last song as the crowd let out, and so he couldn't, an artist cannot give up on a potential audience. He played for another half hour, and that crowd at the lower part of the screen stayed. People were dancing. It was really, really great. On the upper left, you see the Beer and Bones event at Arizona Museum of Natural History, which is a wonderful success. They specifically, well, last year it was Wino Dino, and they decided that beer was an essential element to getting the younger crowd, and they particularly worked through social media to attract younger audiences, and they succeeded tremendously, and it was a wonderful event with great, great age diversity. We are also working to create more social and food events. Next year, you will see that we will be adding more food events to our roster of activities and more social events, including at the museums. There'll be some additional efforts with social events. We have the Southwest Maker Fest that we were a key partner, all three organizations in the department were partners in this new endeavor that was a pilot for a regional festival celebrating making in all its forms. And this was, the pilot event was held on the Saturday of Spark and enjoyed about 4,000 to 5,000 in visitation, which we were very happy about because the idea was to test what worked and what didn't and learn to grow and develop this event for the future, and all the collaborators are committed to continuing that event. We also have TEDx Phoenix, which was at our venue a couple of times before. They took a hiatus for a couple of years. They just told us they are coming back to Mesa. They will be at the Mesa Arts Center in the fall, and that is a very popular event with young people. And we are also adding in things in our series to attract younger audiences with things like spoken word and hip-hop dance that you'll hear more about in our season packages. We are working very hard to make sure that artists feel welcome and supported in Mesa. We feel that and studies show that adds to the vibrancy of a community. And so we continue to support the work through the foundation of the Artist Cooperative Gallery, which is very successful at the store at Mesa Arts Center. We have a wonderful collaboration with ArtSpace, and NEDCO is a partner in that. And the city's been so supportive, and we are so appreciative of the way the council has embraced this project in terms of its potential. We are currently in site selection that is underway and very good prospects of bringing this project to fruition. We have a new category for partnerships at Mesa Arts Center with an educational partnership. We have named two educational partners, Epic Dance Company and Phonetic Spit, that are working with us to provide educational programs through our studio program and our outreach program. And for the first time this coming year, we will be incorporating them into our regular presenting program because we feel that strongly about the quality of their work and the message it sends to artists that we support their work. We also, of course, continue to have opportunities to support and grow artists through our amazing studio program as well as our outreach and education programs. But we have some wonderful ways in which artists have worked with us. The lower right corner shows the color by number mural at Spark that was created by Keelan Maney and Lauren Lee, two wonderful collaborating artists locally. It was an original work of art they created and produced for our festival. Jeff Zischke, a regional artist with a national reputation, created the wonderful temporary site-specific installation of these dragonflies, which lit up at night over the courtyard at MCA. We also continue to value supporting our founding resident companies and our special relationship in partnership with Mesa Historical Museum and Southwest Shakespeare Company. That's a great shot in the upper right of Southwest Shakespeare, Southwest Shakespeare performance. And we continue to support bringing new organizations in or supporting organizations that already use our facilities through the Creative Economy Fund, which continues to be a way to support organizations through in-kind rentals. So we believe that what we're doing is essential to building our creative community and our reputation, and I welcome any questions.
Questions? Observations?
Great pictures.
That's amazing. It really is exciting to see. And tell me again, we kind of blew by those numbers. Tell me the numbers of individuals that are attending and part of all this.
We will end the year with certainly at least 600,000 in participation for the three venues and possibly approaching the 650 number. But, of course, wow. There's still 3 months to go. So we'll be working hard to try to match our record from last year.
This is where we queue up the brass band and the banners and graffiti. It's amazing what's going on there. I know several of us were attending last night at the Arts Center. Standing room only, packed. There's an energy that's going on there. This wonderful presentation tells it. Exciting times, and to see that grow and flourish under your leadership, your wonderful staff, all of the folks that are participating. Exciting to see. And I know I always say this every time I see you. When we first had the chance to interview with you as you were coming to the community, one of my big concerns was that we open that place up and make sure that all the folks in Mesa realize that this is their asset and their wonderful place to be, and you've done an amazing job of achieving that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We couldn't have done it without the council's support. We recognize that all of you are some of our chief advocates, and I can't express how important that is to building a reputation for the community, that this community embraces creative activity, and also, of course, the great work of all the staff who work so very, very hard to make all this happen.
It is. Yeah, please extend to them our appreciation. And if there's no other questions or observations, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Our next item on the agenda is appointments to boards and committees. We have a motion and a second. And what this is, it's a privilege to be able to announce the Falcon Strategic Visioning Commission that we are putting in place. We have it's comprised of some very highly respected and industry leaders throughout Arizona and Mesa, and the commission members have a direct firsthand experience in successfully leading companies through strategic growth. We're excited, having been able to, just in this short time, meet with Councilmember Luna and see his vision and leadership. He's been active from day one about the activities and what is occurring out at Falcon Field and showing great leadership there. And I hope people realize, as we all understand, Falcon Field has been there for 75 years. Within a 5-square-mile area of that Falcon Field facility, we have over 12,000 high-paying, high-order jobs that are in that community. It generates about $2.3 billion of economic benefit to the community, and we realize we need to take the opportunity to come up and improve a strategic plan of what's going to occur out there. This commission of top thinkers and wonderful individuals is going to take a very rapid and precise action to look at all the things that can and will occur out there. We've asked them to kind of take a two-part look at all the opportunities, the strengths, the untapped growth that's in that area, and then come up with this plan and then bring it back to the council, and the council will take a look at this and put it into play as part of the process. And it's been it's interesting to see that now with the economy coming back and all the added interest, there's some great opportunities coming. And we need to make sure that we're prepared as a city and as all the stakeholders out in that area to be able to do it. So that is what is before the council now. And we appreciate the support and welcome any input. And we'll work closely with Councilmember Luna to really make this a positive experience. So we have the motion and second. If there's no other comments from council members, okay, how do we vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Wonderful. Thank you for the support. Our next item on the agenda is information pertaining to the current job order contract process and projects. Anybody have any questions for our wonderful engineering department? No? Then we'll go ahead, hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Councilmember Luna.
Yes, last night we had the showing of First Generation, a video documentary that documented four students in their quest to seek a college education and the financial aid struggles that they all faced. We probably had between 80 to 100 people in attendance, and after the viewing, the students were effusive. They were so excited that we actually did that. So it was a real exciting partnership.
Wonderful. Great event.
With Mesa Council College.
With Mesa Council College. Outstanding. Others? Councilmember Richens.
A couple things. A bike to work event was a Tuesday morning. I didn't actually bike here because I had to go to another place, but I was really impressed with those who did. Lenny Hume looked fantastic in his helmet.
Bikers.
But yeah, a lot of folks did from the city, and it was really neat to see everybody up that early and participating in that event. And then from there, I had to go over to the Farm City breakfast with the Arizona Farm Bureau, and I know several other council members attended that event. It was really well done. I had to leave a little bit early, but I understood they had a really great program. So thanks.
Very nice. Councilmember Summers.
I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been gone a little while.
No, we didn't.
No? Good, good. I snuck it in. Since our meeting with the National League of Cities, where I took the position as chair of the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Committee, we're starting to do some work there. I've had the opportunity to do some fairly considerable travel right after that. I left for Taiwan, and I was in Taichung for 5 days doing a project there for small business continuity planning with the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, of which the United States is a member. And the project that I discussed while I was there is the same one that our Chamber of Commerce it has picked up. It's for small and mid-sized business continuity. We just started doing it here this year, so I had the opportunity to go over there and share what we're doing here in Mesa and across the United States with that project, because it's a project also with the American Red Cross. So we're doing that in partnership. The day I got back from Taiwan, I got back on a plane after repacking and flew all the way to Baltimore and did two back-to-back presentations on what, I'm not sure, because it was a 12-hour difference. In all seriousness, I did it on the both the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, where we put in fire sprinklers to help low-income families protect against fire, but also for downtown, we have a grant program to help businesses afford the cost of sprinklers, and that has gained a lot of attention as a business development tool and personal safety items. So I was invited to go speak about those two programs, so I left there. For the last 2 weeks, I've been doing some personal development, but on Monday, the reason I missed that day, which was a short notice deal, I had an opportunity. I was called by the Red Cross to go to Hollywood, and I was in Los Angeles all day doing filming of a special on disaster preparedness that will be an 8-part series on the Weather Channel. By the way, this has nothing to do with Mesa, but it's going to be an 8-part series on the Weather Channel that will air this fall. So look for it. I'll be signing autographs after this meeting. That's it. I'm buying you a copy. I'm buying you a copy.
Go to the library and download it.
Yeah, yeah, right. There you go. Well, wonderful. Thank you. Been very busy. Others? So an interesting part, went home after a busy day yesterday, sat down in front of the TV, and there was Mesa, Arizona on NBC National News. We have the Arena Grand Prix that is occurring out at Skyline Aquatics Facility. I received several texts this morning that said Mesa, Arizona is all over today's show. Great, exciting things happening there. We're on the national and international map. The facility looks gorgeous as they show it. Yeah, really positive. Great investment in the community, and to see this kind of, and so I know there's, Mr. Phelps and others that are coming out of, he's coming out of retirement and making this his showcase and going. So we're excited to see Mesa get such positive coverage, national and international. So, okay, our next item on the agenda is for scheduling, Mr. Brady.
Thing, Mayor. Also this weekend we have our Celebrate Mesa at Pioneer Park from 2 to 6 on Saturday, so invite the community out to that free event. There'll be a lot of fun activities for the families out there. And then our next study session will be on Thursday, May 1st.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
So if there's no other items, take a motion for adjournment. We have a motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.